Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oler and I will be your host for this program. Today, we speak with Jenny Vergin. Jenny is a product manager at Thunderful Games. Before that, she was a funding manager at Medienbord Berlin and a project manager at Booster Space, where she helped build Games Week Berlin and Womenize. She's also a moderator for events and a Let's Player on her YouTube channel, 2 Into Indie. Jenny is the gamer's gamer. She has probably played over 1,000 indie titles alone and has thereby amassed a giant portfolio of game and design knowledge. But at the end of the day, despite being a huge gamer for all of her life, the entry to the game industry wasn't easy for her. We speak about her times in World of Warcraft, our shared love for a certain esports team, her career, and how she wants to make that entry to the industry easier for future generations. In the end, we talk about why she needed a dictionary for Heroes of Might and Magic 3, and about the artist who she might become in the future. It was a beautiful conversation with Jenny, and of course Florian, we had lots of fun, so I hope you do too. Sit back, relax, and enjoy our conversation with Jenny Vergin.
Hello and welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast with my beautiful co-host Simon.
Hello, thank you very much.
And our guest today is Jenny Vergin, who is to me the archetype of a gamer, and we will talk about that later. She must have played about 1,000 games in her career and through her numerous roles in the industry. Let's see. We have her starting as a community and social media manager at ClansWeb. If I remember correctly, that has something to do with World of Warcraft and guilds. We might talk about that. She also was an event manager at Booster Space, where she handled events like Games Week Berlin, Womenize, and VR NowCon. She was a funding manager for games at Medienbord Berlin Brandenburg. And she recently jumped into the publishing business as a product manager for Thunderful Publishing. And through all of that, she also has been running a YouTube Let's Play channel with her flatmate, Yosha, playing tons of indie games under the label 2 Into Indie. Jenny, how are you today?
Thanks, I'm really good. Thanks for having me here today.
Did I miss anything in your games bio?
No, from time to time I'm moderating small tournaments, but that's really just a small job, so no. You did really well. So I worked a long time, by the way, for Booster Space as a project manager as well, not only events. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's my bio.
Yeah. As I said, to me, you're the archetype of a gamer. That is because I know that you're a geek and like having played millions of games. And also we share some history that goes back very, very far, but we didn't know each other then, but we found out that you're kind of a World of Warcraft geek. We figured out that you used to be, and this is super nerdy for anybody who has no idea about World of Warcraft, I'm sorry. You were playing a Restoration Druid, and that's a healing class. And you were one of the best ones in at least Germany, I would say. Because when you told me what your name was back then, I was like, wait a minute, I think I saw some posts on forums or like, I even asked you if you did some videos back then already, because you have a YouTube channel now, but you said you don't. But yeah, let's talk a little bit and let's geek out a little bit about World of Warcraft and your experience there. Maybe there's a story to tell.
Ooh, that's a great start, right? Oh yeah, I was in a really good guild during that time. And when I started playing World of Warcraft, it was vanilla, obviously, and very early. So I played the beta. I shared my account with my younger brother. He's 4 years younger than me, and he was really a kid back in the days. So what we did is just sharing the account. At some point, we wanted to split. The account wasn't possible during that time. So that was my first contact with Blizzard, because we have to write them an email with our passports and everything to ask them if they can split this account. Funny story, because later when they implement their own system, my name in the system was the name of my brother, because we both had the same name then, and the system was really fucked up. So Blizzard wrote us many years later what's happening there, and we tried to explain that I'm not Julian. Yeah, was really nice. But yeah, when I started playing World of Warcraft, I think I know about 3 or 4 other girls in our server. So 2 from the Alliance, 1 on the other side.
We don't say their name.
It changed a lot over time. It changed a lot over time. And I learned so much about so many different things. So I have really cool colleagues, really cool guild members and everything. But at some point, someone posted that Ladria is a girl. Mm-hmm. And I get hundreds of letters every fucking day. People sending me just items or small things and writing to me, "Hey, I hear you're a girl. That's so nice. You want to play together?" I was so, but I have already my guild and my friends here. So, yeah. And yeah, later on, you know, I don't have to tell you, it's more about 50-50, but, yeah, it was a great experience during back in the days. And some people don't believe that I was a girl at all. So, yeah, I think the funniest stories was about a raid. Can I tell this or?
Sure.
So when we were in Sunwell, my guild was really good. So we just took some time, finished everything, and other people.
What was your guild's name?
You really want to know this? Chromatic.
Chromatic. Yeah, because I mean, maybe. People can relate to it then. And maybe they were like, "What? You were in Chromatic?" I mean, I never played WoW, but maybe some people want to know.
It was on EU Onyxia. I think it's not existing anymore because the Realm pools were put together after a while. But yeah. So when you played World of Warcraft on EU Onyxia, let me know, because it's really cool just to meet people from back in the time. Yeah. But yeah. So we played. We were good then. And a friend of mine was in, you know, more like a casual guild, was super nice. And I always liked to play with him. And he asked me if I can help him out, because they were just dying at Brutalus all the time. And they asked me how I did the healing stuff back then. And I wrote to him, "Yeah, I can show you, or I can just play with your character when it's okay." And then he asked the guild, and I joined, and I was like, "Hi guys, I'm Ladriana, will help you today." And everyone was so, wait, you're Ladria. You're the Chromatic Ladria. Wow, you're a girl." I was so, "Yeah. So let's start this thing." And everyone was so, "Why didn't you tell us that Ladria is a girl?" I was so, "Oh my God, let's not talk about me being a girl." So yeah.
Yeah. Being a girl and being good at the same time. How can it be?
It's impossible. No, it isn't. Impossible. But, yeah.
Oh, man.
But that was my gaming career start.
Yeah. And so I know that there's an add-on, just like in World of Warcraft, to this story, because at some point I think it maybe got a little too much in terms of people contacting you about being a girl. So what did you do in other games?
So when I skipped playing World of Warcraft, I decided to try League of Legends, what I played for 8 years. So I really enjoyed this game. But because everyone was writing me, and Ladrias, so there are many male people who had female character names, but I don't know why, but Ladria was obviously always maybe girls related. So I decided to go with really, let me say, young boy name, Bloodfang, because I just realized when I'm calling my name Bloodfang in League of Legends, everyone was thinking about a 14 years old boy. And I was writing it with an big E and a 3. So really, really nerdy and kiddie like. And nobody never asked me if I'm a girl until I joined a server, when I found people to play with. And then they are what the fuck? Why are you doing? Why is your name Bloodfang? And I'm so, I don't want to be shown as a girl in this game. So nobody will expecting this. Yeah. So I'm still Bloodfang there.
Yeah. That's, I mean, you gotta get creative if you want to just game in peace sometimes as a woman. So I think things have changed over time. Hopefully in most cases, of course, the internet is a place where stuff just happens. So you never know. But yeah, World of Warcraft, League of Legends, those are all, let's say, more the AAA titles, and definitely also have a focus on esports to some degree, World of Warcraft at least, but definitely League of Legends. And one thing we noticed together is that we are both pretty much into esports, although, I had some connection with esports, I guess, already, but like we were mostly on the games side of the industry so far. But I know that you are very interested in this and that you always like wanted to do something with esports. Tell us a little bit about why this is so interesting to you.
Yeah, sure. So in general, you have to know that I'm super obsessed about, so I'm love sports in general, not every sport, obviously, but I did a lot of sports when I was younger. And for me, esport was always like, even when it hasn't a name, you know, the first League of Legends World Championship, it yep. wasn't called esport back in the days, but it was so like, oh God, people playing things I am enjoying and they are super good and I want to watch them and I want to share for people. So it starts with me just liking sport and then people are just playing games I like, but then
what
it shifted.
I wanted to know what the sports were that you played as a kid or when you were young.
So athletics. I was a Berlin master in hurdles and North Germany. So I really loved this kind of stuff. And later I played lacrosse, what's super untypical for a German, but yeah. Half of my family lives in Canada and there is a big sport. So, So that's...
And then, sorry, I interrupted you. You said first you just enjoyed that people played what you liked and then it shifted?
Yeah, to me watching almost every esport tournament, every big one, even the internationals, for example. I never played Dota, but watching the internationals is just a fun thing to do. And then at some point I was super into watching PUBG tournaments and really, so I went to the biggest tournaments and saw the national championships and it was really nice. And I fall in love with one team. And since then I'm watching everything what this team is doing. So Counter-Strike and PUBG and other things. The only thing I'm not sharing for is League of Legends for this team because I have another team there, but it's really funny. So now we have Team Liquid fan articles in our flat. And so...
Nice. You're a Team Liquid fan, yeah?
Yeah, but not in League of Legends.
Okay,
but in PUBG, I really love
it. And what's
it.
Your League of Legends team?
Just right now, I didn't have one, to be honest, because my team isn't existing anymore. So we will find out.
Okay. Well, I want to tell you a little thing, because I'm a Team Liquid fan, too.
Maybe, oh, really?
Yeah, maybe because of a different background. So... my esports background is StarCraft 2.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that esports existed when I was a bit younger, and I was like, isn't there something called mouse sports or something? And blah blah blah. And it was mostly about Counter-Strike, but I wasn't in touch with it at all. I was more into music. But then when I turned 18, 19, 20, I moved out from home, and my best buddy, who's the audio engineer for this podcast, so hello Zebby, told me, hey man, StarCraft 2 is coming out and we gotta get into StarCraft. You have to like StarCraft. And I'm like, hey man, leave me alone, man. I don't like real-time strategy because it's so complicated. You know, I always sucked at Age of Empires and I only use cheats. And he was like, no. He used to be very persuasive like that. And then he was like, no, trust me, this is good. And then well, I actually got into it and we watched a lot of YouTube stuff, and that was like StarCraft 1. And shortly after StarCraft II came out. So it's a big thing for me. And I learned to play a real-time strategy game. Very exciting. And the big platform where everything happened was Team Liquid. So that was teamliquid.net. And that was before they were such a successful, huge name. So they were just a very small StarCraft 1 clan. And then, do you know this story, Jenny? Do you know about the background of Team Liquid?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, then I'll tell it for everybody. And then they became, then they started, they were the core community place. They still are for StarCraft. It's called TL.net now instead of TeamLiquid.net because TeamLiquid.com, I think, is the URL for the team now and not just for the community. And then they started signing StarCraft players, and then they also had some poker players, and then they merged with Curse, which was a big multi-gaming organization, American. Team Liquid is based out of the Netherlands, I think Utrecht area. And, then they became the powerhouse that they are today with so many games. But, yeah, through the StarCraft origin, I, too, am a Team Liquid fan, albeit with some other background. But yeah, Team Liquid, go Team Liquid. Let's go.
I think the another funny thing is because Flo told about the clan swap where I started. Mm-hmm. So one of the founders, Frederick, he was a really famous esport back in the days where nobody knows about esport, Fisheye, and he played StarCraft.
Hell yeah, I know this guy.
Yeah, and he was my old boss. And so it was really funny because it was like, oh, you're the one I saw, on YouTube. It's really funny. Yeah, so, yeah.
So Flo, you remember when we warmed up for this that I told you that I know a guy at this clan swap that something rings a bell? Yep. I hung out with Fisheye a couple of times. Really nice guy.
Yeah, and he is really cool.
I was already at Twitch and... Yeah, he was, I think, trying to rebuild that or building something else. And yeah, we were also sharing the love for StarCraft. So that's good. Small world. I like these things. Very good.
I personally don't know him, but I know the tag, Fisheye. I've heard of it in terms of StarCraft. I never was a big StarCraft person. And currently, I also don't have any esports teams I like. Because I won't name the one I used to like. And since there's this new thing coming up, I guess I can say Eintracht Spandau. Sort of are you allowed to say Berlin club? I don't know. It's a Spandau club, but that might lead too far in this episode.
Yeah, I think you can say this, but don't forget about G2. It's also Berlin based. So
I mean, there's many ones, but you have to hype. You have to hype.
Okay.
G2 is also cool. I like many teams. I like esports in general or not, depending on the day and who gets acquired by whom. Let's move on to something else, which came up when we talked leading up to this podcast, which is that obviously this experience, and first of all, we started with talking about this just because it was funny to us how much tangentially we were connected back then already. But this experience of getting all this weird fan mail and people just jumping on you because you're a girl. You said that also obviously made you consider your role as a woman in this space. And of course, later on with your career at Booster Space and project managing there, you actually had this format called Women Eyes. And that's something that you did for quite a long time. So we want to talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah, sure. So the Women Eyes project management thing was, to be honest, the one what really put me in the place of the gaming industry. So I'm always very glad for being in this project. And I don't know, I just started as a speaker manager for a week. And then Michael, my CEO, back in the days, asked me if I want to have this project and if I want to lead this thing. And I never did a job like this before. So it was like my biggest jumping into the water and try to survive thing in my life. But since then, I have the feeling I can survive everything, to be honest. So because I know I was swimming a lot, because I had no experience in project lead and no experience in event management, and I have to do both. Yeah, but it works really well. And the whole project is really like a baby still for me, because it's not about women only in the games industry. It's more about showing role models, and it's open for all gender, because we think it's super important to opening up things like this and not building new bubbles. So, and I met so many, really so many amazing people, speakers from all over the world. Yeah. And I learned so many things for my own career and life. So that's why I really liked and loved the time for myself. So 5 years are really long. So yeah,
organizing like speakers for conferences, it's also something I did at Game One for the first time, and just having that experience of looking, like finding a program that will fit your audience and finding the right speakers for that, and who do you want on stage and what would you like them to talk about, or which are the points that they would like to bring, and then bring those people to your event and having them there, and just like amazing people who you never thought would actually consider just like visiting your country, let alone coming to your event. It's like a really great experience. And I'm always happy that that's part of my work still to some extent when we have panels that we organize. But like the speaker connection is really something that like it opens up a whole new dimension of the industry, at least to me that felt like it.
Yeah, and the speaker, you know, when you're getting along very well, sometimes they're inviting you for events in their companies, or it's just opening a new world and mindset. So just I met Rachel Curico. I always wanted to meet her because she's just one of the biggest role models, not only in esport, because she was a journalist before, but female journalists, you know, back in the days, not that many. And esport female faces back in the days, also not very visible. So I really enjoyed talking to her about so many things. We have so many amazing people. So I talked with Maxime Durand. He is a historical researcher for Ubisoft Montreal. So he's working on the Assassin's Creed titles, and he is also so nice. He was so nice and so inspiring, you know? So yeah, that's, I don't know, it always keep the joy and the passion in me very high for games and for all the topics that are connected with it. So, yeah.
That's the second time you talked to me about a female role model of yours. And I hear that there was another role model that you have, and that you actually also met through this, and that there's a story behind that as well.
Melek Balgün, Melly. She's now one of my better friends. So we're not like best buddies, because we're not living in the same town, but I really love this girl because she's super amazing. And she was an e-sportler when she was younger. Now, when you don't know her, she's moderating events. You see her when you're just connected with the German games industry. She is, I don't know, she has really passion. She knows her stuff. She's always kind to people. So, yeah, and she never know about this, but I just explained it to her when I make a keynote before she was moderating an event. What was a bit like, oh, I felt a bit for her, because she was so, oh my God, Jenny, you can't say this before I have to talk all day on the stage. But it was so cute. And she's really nice. And I don't know, Petra, you know, the game star, Petra. Mm-hmm. I think she was Petra my Schmitz. First. She was, to be honest, she was my first role model in the industry.
So cool. I enjoyed because, her so yeah, much. Yeah.
I was a child, you know, and there weren't so many female faces. And then she was the journalist one, you know,
yeah,
the one who talks about games, writing about games. She was always like the one, yeah, role model I had. And I told her this as well. It was a bit, you know, I was really, oh God, how can I say this? But yeah, but it's true. So, yeah.
Why is it important for you to tell this to people and connect with them on that level? And let me add something to that, because maybe some people want to be more, let's say, like cool about it and be like, oh, you know, now I'm, you know, swimming in this pool and here are the other people swimming too. So let me just kind of act like, you know, it's normal that we're swimming together. And I can tell you that I played it a little bit like that when I was in the games industry, because, you know, I met like a lot of big streamers when I was at Twitch, and I was always like, no, let me, you know, not fanboy out. Let me play it really cool and like be peers with everyone. Mm-hmm. And I really respect that you're telling this to people. Why is this important to you?
I think because I always dreamed to be in the games industries. When I was a child, I started to build maps for Age of Empires 2, like thousands of maps, to be honest, in the editor. And I always dreamed of making games, but because I think I'm just slightly too old, because there weren't universities for that when I began to study, or it was super expensive and too expensive for me or my family. So I don't know. It was always like, thanks to these people, I really had the feeling I can do this and want to do this. So they don't know this, but they are part of my journey. And so I try to let people know, but not in a weird way. So I'm always trying this very charming. And I'm, no doubt. The funniest thing is I'm not a fangirly type of person, because when I was a teenager, I wasn't into boy bands or something like this. So it's really interesting that I'm more the role model type of person, but even a good friend can be a role model. Don't has to be someone who everyone knows.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really cool. Yeah. I think it's a great kind of a vulnerable thing, you know, to say, and also very, like you said, you have to do it in a charming way, because it's very easy to embarrass people with that, right? To lay it on too thick. But if you do it right, then yeah, it's very meaningful. I think it can mean a lot to the people you say it to. Yeah, cool. Thank you for doing that and for telling that. That's so nice. Mm.
Yeah. Oh, where did I want to go next with this, actually? Something that you mentioned to us before, and that was quite interesting to me, and it actually connects to what you just said, like coming to meeting those people as well, is, and how you studied, is that just like me or so many people, you didn't study anything that's related to games. So you came from a completely different background, and now you have a focus on being interested in how people can come to the industry and how that works. So why is that so important to you?
Mm. So let me say the we have two things in Germany. So one is we have really good game universities for studying game studies. What I really like, and I will support this as much as I can, because it's super important. But I think on the other side, we're lacking with non-study jobs. You know, the entry level to be, you have to study is, I think, not the right thing always. And it's even starts with when you're asking people or kids in the schools. I had a project when I worked at Medium Board with the Stiftung Digitale Spielekultur. Projekttage Games is it called. So it's like project days in schools where people from our industry is going to schools and telling them about their jobs. just to open up the mindset that when you're working in the games industry, you don't have to be game dev, you know, there are more opportunities. And I think they are super diverse. And the problem is, first, nobody knows about this. Second, the parents don't know about this. And third, I think just having the, let me say, the gate of you can come in our industry, but you have to be studying. It's not the right thing to do. So that's something it really concerns me. Mm-hmm. And maybe just to reflect on myself. So I am from a family where nobody studied before me. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I learned in a workshop a few months ago that usually most of the people who are studying now had parents that studied. So I'm one of really a few percent in Germany that had, yeah, from a working family background. And we don't have that much money. So the good thing in Germany is everyone can study it. Almost everyone can study it. But even then I need a, you know, I have the bank credit for being able to study. And that's not something that's super nice when you're finishing with university and you know you have to pay back a lot of money. So yeah, I think it was hard just to find the right way inside then. And I think we can change this. And then when we change things like this, we open up the door for so many more talents and young people. And it's super fair because, to be honest, not every job in our industry has to be studied. There are so many hands-on jobs and yes, you can learn them. Yeah. In business schools or something like this. So yeah.
Yeah. That's a good topic to talk about because I mean, like I said, I also didn't come from a gaming background. I mean, I had games as a hobby for a very long time, playing also competitively and all the stuff we talked about before. And, but I never knew like what to do with that. Just, I mean, I liked it, but like, I also never had this dream that many people described. Like, they always wanted to work in games. To me, I just couldn't actually comprehend that that would be an option. Same as with, I always, for a very long time, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. So I also studied, also first person in my family. I started one course, didn't finish it, started another, didn't finish it. So I was always kind of lost. And then I had this skill that I felt like I somehow am able to connect people, if it is friends or if it is finding interesting people for projects or whatever, but I couldn't bring all those things together into like something that, to be fair, growing up in a very rural part of Germany, like those opportunities there didn't just present themselves. And after leaving there, it was just much clearer to me, like how my life could look and like that I would enjoy doing exactly what I'm doing now and can be good at it. But the games industry needs people like that specifically. So, I mean, I came into it just by doing a student's job with a friend's studio, just doing some office work on the side because I had some knowledge in writing invoices and like doing that kind of stuff. And it didn't even start out as like, oh my God, this is a career. It was just like, oh, maybe I can do something cool to earn some money while I'm studying. And then I was just drawn into it. But I also am
Flo,
completely
real
opposed.
Quick. You were the first person in your family to study or like in your recent lineage?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I didn't finish as well.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So, but there's that. Okay. Interesting. Yes, I didn't finish. And yes, that's also what I wanted to say about this. So I got sucked into this and then now I'm in the games industry and I think I found my place. That's why I'm always super thankful about working in this space because I'm just like so happy that I just feel at home. And I know where I can go with this now. And although I might not have a 5-10 year, whatever plan, but there's something new, interesting comes along all the time in this industry. So it's amazing. I'm always interested in this dynamic of also how you enter into the industry and then what you said. And I want to discuss this a little bit because, you said that there should be like better job opportunities or new job opportunities and maybe new ways of studying them, I guess, as well. So do you think, like, is it the, like, or maybe not studying even, like making, creating new job titles that would be accepted maybe as well? I think that's also something interesting. But do you think the games industry isn't the one or one of the industries that is really open to like people who have no direct connected experience and just absorbing them kind of?
So just right now, I would say the most people I know from the games industry are between, let me say, 30 and then plus, so older than 30. Mm-hmm. And most of them are came from another background because, yep. I don't know, because it wasn't, there wasn't a clear way to get in the industry. But I have many friends that are younger than 30, yeah, who studied game design. So it's really classic. So yeah, you're making your, yeah, finish school, study game design, being a game dev and start your career. So, but that's quite new. But I have the feeling that just right now, it's not a problem because you can just come from everywhere. But when I look into and speak to, I spoke with many, many, let me say young talents, but it doesn't mean that they are young in age wise. So mm-hmm. more like young in experience wise. And they told me they're doing this, let me say community management is a great example for this. They're doing this for free for like 6 years because they really want to be in the industry and try to get enough knowledge of being interesting to bigger companies, because even when it comes to young talents, everyone is looking for people who had some skills and experience, and that's, I don't know, sometimes it's super sad because they are like me, they were in the same age as me when I just started in the industry, but it's really hard sometimes because it's not that easy. So and I just think it can't be that the only way to being a game dev in the future is be studying or just being really amazing. Like, I don't know, Stefan Hüvebrings is a great example for someone who wasn't studying. One of our
trash.
I wanted to say one of our Saftladen devs. Yeah.
Yep.
Because he was doing something else as well. And then he just trained himself to be able to make a game like this. And mm-hmm. I think that's an amazing example, but it needs so much passion, so much work and everything. And you can't be, I don't know, not everyone is made for this. Some people need
That's the true life of an artist, right? You're really just pushing against yourself off all the rails, you know, that's hardcore. I met you guys the same day, by the way. It was a good day.
yeah, it was. Oh, yeah, but I think that's the problem. So we have to find ways without having, so in Germany, Abitur, to be able to move on in your life, mm-hmm. because creative jobs don't need an Abitur. Some, but not, no, you can't tell me that's the rule, you know, for the future of young people. So, yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Simon, do you have any ideas about that?
Yeah, no. Like I wanted to ask what was your what would your suggestion be or something? So how do we do that? I don't know if you already brought that up and I missed it, but what do you have a concrete idea of how that can happen?
Yeah, I think we can build apprenticeships. Is the right word?
Apprenticeships. Yeah. Apprenticeships.
Yes. Thanks. In for many things.
That would be so cool.
I think it would be easy and handleable, to be honest. But that's something that has to come in Germany, I guess, out of our industry together with the, I don't know, game, mm-hmm. for example, because they have the political power. And then, but all those things has to come from an industry itself. It's not like that some random people just deciding we have to have this one. But I think to build up those things would be really good for our future because we really need more employees, obviously. And
that's
the second problem.
Idea.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Ahead. No, it's okay. I think the second problem we have in Germany is payment, but that's the, yeah, that's another issue, because I know many young talents are going into other countries in Europe. And after they finished and worked here for a while, and that's also sad. But that's another problem. But just to be the entrance level, to set it like for everyone, you know, very easy, that would be so nice. Yeah. That's my dream for the next years.
Yeah.
That's cool. I want to say something about this. So, because I usually don't think about that. So it's really cool to think about this now, to think alongside you, Jenny, and be like, oh, well, that's crazy, because if I look at what I'm seeing, you know, on the internet, reading Twitter or whatnot, there's a whole thing that, you know, universities are getting a bit weaker, you know, a bit worse in reputation, less maybe knowledge oriented, more politics oriented or whatever. I don't know so much about it, but it's just kind of what's the whispers in the underbrush. And on the other hand, you know, there's like this thing that, well, nobody, you know, wants to be a plumber. Not nobody, but many people, of course, young people do not opt for apprenticeship specifically because they are not popular.
Although that's one of the oldest gaming jobs in the world.
What do you mean?
Plumber.
Oh, the plumber. Correct. Exactly, right? Oh, that's funny as hell. Nice one. Yeah, so, but especially, you know, among the nerds and the geeks, where there's like a certain level of, I don't know, baseline intelligence. And I don't mean this disparagingly, just like kind of braininess, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't, I mean, I couldn't imagine myself as any type of handyman, even though now I'm kind of mad that I don't have the skills, but that's another topic. But I think that there's a switch coming where apprenticeships, just in general as a thing, will become much more attractive, because even if we go into the metaverse and all that, we still need handymen and handywomen who can get stuff done and who can build stuff, because we all need to live. And then, of course, there is going to be some type of digital landscape that's already there, that's going to be more detailed, that needs digital handymen and handywomen, right? And I mean, programming, coding is essentially a craft. I mean, like, I follow very many funny, like, anon Twitter accounts and stuff. And there are people there that are, like, bragging, you know, since Corona, that they went into, software development jobs with no experience. Mm-hmm. Like, all they have is Google and Stack Overflow, right? And then they just Google themselves through the thing. And I mean, that's what most experienced devs do also anyway, and scrappy startup founders. So Googling yourself to software solutions is the way anyway. So that's not a brainy academic task. That's handiwork. So I don't know how it is with games development, not much experience, but I suppose roughly the same. And modeling, and, you know, these are literal, like when you were back in the day and you would, if I think of Nazis and Goldmund, the Hermann Hesse book, Goldmund becomes an apprentice for a figure carver. I mean, what are you doing in Maya or whatever wherever you're creating your models or your graphics, textures, your drawings? I mean, these are all things that you can apprentice for under an experienced artist or person. Yes. So, yeah, man. Yo, like,
and this
thanks
is
for
why.
Saying this. I'm a bit flashed right now. I'm like, yo.
Yeah, or just think about all the other jobs, you know, our industry can offer: event management things, community management things, social media,
partnerships,
marketing manager.
How to talk to people.
Exactly.
You can all learn this from people. You don't need to be a brainy university guy. You can just be a good person.
Yeah,
I mean, universities are also people teaching you things, but
yeah, and I studied. I don't want to say studying is a dumb thing, to be honest, but you know, it's just I can compare to another thing in my life if you want.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, please.
Before I was in the games industry, I had a life before, obviously, and I was massage. So I didn't study this because in Germany you don't have to study this, but I went to a school, you know, like 2.5 years, I had all the courses and I had to pay for this, and I learned it on a professional level, you know, with anatomy classes and everything you have to know. So, and then I worked in a hospital and I wanted to work in Japan afterwards. So that was the plan. And because of this, I just Googled a bit and found out that there are, let me say, parts of the world where you can't doing your job as a professional medical massage, because just Australia, for example, it's a studying job there. You have to have to study this in a university. And when you didn't study, you're not allowed to work there. Only on, let me say, wellness base. And I was so, but why? And then I just met a person who did this there. And she was obviously very good in all these anatomic things, but I was good as well in those things. But she told me I have so much more experience because, you know, it's 1 month class, 1 month going into a hospital and doing things on people with people. And it's so much more based on knowledge in between humans, because therapeutic jobs are between humans and you have to learn this, and you didn't learn this on paper. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think some, yeah, like community management, you can learn this, or event management, you can learn this on in another road, let me say. So hands on. And
it happens like that anyway, right? Because you're, I don't know, you study marketing or whatever, and then you get hired as an event manager. And then, yeah, you use some of your stuff to market your events or whatever. But I mean, you will get shown the ropes by somebody who's experienced in event management.
So just imagine, yes, you have two. Usually in bigger companies, you have two. You can have one out of university and one out of, let me say, another way, can be different ways. But, and I swear, both of them has so different backgrounds. They will support each other really nice. That's usually what the way is. So,
yeah. To me, like, coming back a little bit to the universities, I think the longer I'm away from, maybe that's the same for everybody who just becomes more, like entwined with their job or their industry. I feel like there's so many ways that lead to Rome, and, like the universities, even within universities. And that's something that I caught also in this, like, learning from sort of a master. Even universities are very different in how they will teach their students, like, mm-hmm. what they do. And specifically, I think that there are the ones that go on a very, like, straight to the point. We will teach you skills. You will use these skills, and then you will work in an industry, and it becomes more the, like, de-universification of universities. I don't know how to explain it. It becomes more like what used to be an apprenticeship in a mm-hmm. way. But specifically, I know that, for example, the guys I started out with at Black Pants, those who studied at the University of Arts, they specifically said, we won't teach you how to use Photoshop, or we won't teach you how to do what, like, you're at university to, like, stimulate your brain to come up with ideas, to learn about concepts. You have to do the Googling yourself. And I think that's specifically something that universities overall, maybe in games as well, they don't really focus on that much. And one point that I also wanted to make in this, because now I'm at the stage where I sometimes get invited to speak in front of students. And it's always funny to me going into those, because obviously at the beginning, you sort of say, like, hey, I'm Florian. I do this and this and this. And this is how I started out. And that, like, you let them know what's your experience and why are you standing or sitting in front of them. And I always wonder if I should say, well, I never finished studies, but you guys should, or, like, do whatever you want, you know, like, there, you can do it anyway. But yeah, that's just a funny observation I had.
Yeah. And it's not that all. So just to make it clear, I don't think that studying is a bad thing. So, and I know, just look at what HTV students achieved in the last years, winning big prizes, having really good titles on the market. So obviously there is a way. And I studied at the University of Potsdam, my master thesis, or my master degree, and I finished it there. And I was really lucky because it was the only university I really wanted to do my master, because it was so much more open. So it's more like you have a topic, like, let me say, immersive or just a word, and then everyone can do something based on this, but something that he or she would like to do. So I was doing everything related to game studies, and I was so happy with it. And then I found support, you know, inside the university. This is super great. But when it's all about just doing the same thing as in a bachelor, just on a, let me say, more complicated base, then I didn't learn new stuff. So, and I really loved this, let me say, the whole EMV course, what I did there, so European Media Studies. It was really good. And yeah, I met Michael there, and then I started my career in the games industry. So yeah, I'm really glad that I did this and I learned a lot. But you have to have your own push, right? When you're just there to learn the things they are telling you, then it's not enough usually. I would always say, try to find a place to work a bit. Even, you know, when you're just 25 and you never worked before, not even a small thing, then you will find out working is not that easy, and it's not, even in the best company, not all day full of joy. Yep. And that's something I found out. So not for me, but some of my younger friends were just like, wow, it's not like I thought it is. And I was so, yeah, because you never worked before.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, whatever. So that's...
No, I think what you just said, the important thing is that with studying, you want to have something that's... You want to aim beyond your good grades and making your professors happy and being good friends with your fellow students. You want to aim... Your point of aim is beyond that, so you can hit all the good targets there and sometimes slack off because you're aiming beyond it. And I think that's probably all our experience. Because then you can say, well... It doesn't matter. I had a conversation with my friend Paul the other day, who I'm working on a movie with, a documentary, Purpose of Gaming, and we were having one of those times where we need to realign, right? Reset, and we had a bit of a difficult call last week, and then this week we talked and like, okay, what are we doing? What is it about? And for example, in that instance, we said, well, you know, it's about, first and foremost, we are friends, right? It's not important what exactly we do. On that way of our friendship and colleagueship and working together, we might make a movie, but maybe we fail, but that's fine. And it's the same in life and with studies. You know, you study in order to. Studying is not the thing. For many people it is, because they don't think beyond, which is fine for some time. Usually stuff gets dropped in front of you, stuff happens, and that's fine, you know. But that's what you said. It's like, hey, what's your point beyond? What's your own push, you called it? That's a good way to say it. And whether that's in work with friends or work with colleagues or studying, aim beyond. So the vehicle you're using is not the end in itself, because that's usually not true.
Yeah, and when don't be too stressed, right? When you don't know what exactly you want to do. That's what, to be honest, when you look at my Instagram or Twitter profile, it says I'm class-wise all-rounder, and that isn't a lie, because it's just I did so many different things in my life. Yeah. And I have so many friends that are so f-ing good in one thing because they did this all life.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I can bring out other skills from other experiences into my current job. And I'm sure without, you know, all these experience, I wouldn't have started as a product manager at Thunderful, because, it's like what I experienced so far. And that's, I don't know. I think it's super important for everyone to know that this classical I dreaming of being a doctor, and I'm a doctor all days for the rest of my life, isn't really true. not in our days.
That's why Life is my favorite game to play, because all the XP you collect transfers, you know? It's like you can't bring your WoW XP to, I don't know, Lost Ark now or whatever. But in life you can, you know.
Unless you put it in an NFT.
I knew you. No, these are lies. Don't believe these lies. I know you don't. But this is the cool thing. All your XP counts, because you are the XP vessel, right? Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Let's do a jump here and talk about something else, which is two things I want to connect is like your fable for playing games and doing that like as a hobby. And then, I mean, going further than most people with a hobby and like doing a Let's Play channel and putting your stuff out there in the world. And then starting at Medienboard Berlin Brandenburg, which is the, funds games projects in Berlin and Brandenburg for companies who have concepts and want to finalize those. So yeah, tell us a little bit about what your proficiency in playing games and your like love for playing games brought you to Medienboard and how it helped you to do that job.
So I love indie games. That's not a secret. And you already mentioned the YouTube channel. So maybe I'll start with this one, just because I was at the beginning of moderating things in a cinema. So things that are happening on a screen. And I found out that that's a challenge, obviously, at the beginning, but you can handle it. But as soon as you're starting playing yourself and you have to talk all the time, it's another challenge, I can tell you. So if you never try this, please do. You will find out as soon as it's getting super complicated, you will be silenced in the beginning. So and then I try to know as much as I could on what indie games are out right now on the market, and to build up a bigger portfolio as I had, because I'm super into strategy, roguelikes, and also into, let me say, adventure games. But I really wanted to know more about it. So that's why Josh and I started the YouTube channel, just to practice, to know a little bit more, to play games we never would have chosen before. And I learned so much about, wow, I played this game, I would never pick this, and it's the most enjoyable diamond this year. So that's how I started. And because of all these, let me say, new informations that are in my head, combined with the things I studied and learned how to analyze games, it was like a really huge database. And I started having a Trello board with just, I don't know, few things, examples for, let me say, skills or how people doing things, and it grows and grows and grows. And then, then I started the Medienboard job, when I was still, so I assigned it when I was still in the university, but started it afterwards.
Did you start your YouTube channel before that? Did I hear that right?
My YouTube channel is older than my Medienboard job.
Okay. So you already collected all this data. Okay. No, just making sure. Cool.
So are we playing, let me say, famous indie games? Like, I don't know, Ollie, or games where you can starting a fight if this is still indie or not, you know, like A Plague's Tale, what's just a big money cow, to be honest. But we're also playing indie games nobody heard it before. So really small ones, but really good ones. And with all this information, I was getting into the new job where you have to help people by app. So by the whole application process, but also when you have the first meeting with them, then I'm asking them about the competition analysis, and then I can usually help with this because I know so many other games they can take a look in, and we can talk on a very, let me say, gamer to gamer level about things, what is super nice for the most devs, because they're expecting someone who is typical in non-gamer sitting in on a money share, let me say it this way, even when I'm not giving the money. So obviously I was, you know, just the funding manager, not the one with the money. But yeah, so I helped them with this. And I learned because of their competition analysis and their thinking a lot more. And at some point, what I'm really, what I really appreciated is the Indie Arena Bus asked me if I want to be joining their jury. And thanks to that, I played hundreds of games every year just to figuring out which one is getting the most points to get a boost in the Indie Arena. And so my portfolio now is just huge. A really huge knowledge of indie games. And yeah, that's, to be honest, that brought me to Thunderful.
Yeah. That's what you have to do. Like, be a gamer and not say, I've played 100,000 of games. Like, my portfolio of played games. Like, that's a skill.
Yeah. I thought the same just now. Wow. What a word for that. Like, I have a knowledge base, my friends.
Yes.
So cool.
And exactly. And through it makes sense then that your next logical step, which was the most recent one starting this year, was jumping over into the industry and starting with Thunderful. Let us know a little bit what you have to do there. What's your job? And yeah, how you like it so far, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So let me start at the beginning. So I really loved my MediumBot job because it makes people happy. So just helping people with getting money for their dreams is super nice.
Great, right? And it was the same for me at Twitch. It's so funny.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's really, like, it's really so nice. But on the other end, it's the end of the world there, you know, because you can't do, there isn't another job after this one. So, and I'm just in the middle of my 30s, so I don't want to be stuck in the same company doing the same job when the job isn't evolving. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things that I had always on my mind. And then, yeah, I just, obviously I always loved Head Up Games, and because the people are there are so nice. And I know the CEO Dieter, because I met him during wrong events halt in Germany. And
shout out to Dieter.
Yeah, a big one. Thanks. Yeah, and then we just talked about this when he Head Up was becoming a part of Thunderful. But it wasn't like, oh yeah, come on, come to us, let's start a job. It was more like, are you interested in the future, when we had new job opportunities? And then we talked about this, I think, 9 months later or so. The special thing about Thunderful is, for me, it's like, you know, the company is older, but the publisher part of the company isn't that old. So it's growing like hell. It's not like you're joining a company and you're replacing someone who left, or you have to do it the one way. They always did it, like, mm-hmm. 20 years. And that's something I really like. I think it's because of my project management background that new challenges are always good for me. And I am not so much into doing a thing exactly as another person, even when the person was super great. So for me, this was the biggest opportunity, because it means we as a team. So we have two teams, just for you to know, in Thunderful Publishing. One is more the internal title, like The Gunk and SteamWorld, the internal IP team. Mm-hmm. And my team is the from small to big indie game ones. So that's our responsible to be working with all these titles. And so it means we as a team, we're growing together, because we're evolving together, and we will achieve something together, because we're willing, rebuilding something new up. And that's super satisfying, to be honest. That's what I dreamed of. And it's like true, because my colleagues are super nice. Everyone is super different, came from another background. And we are merch companies, obviously, because everyone who knows Thunderful knows they are they were buying and integrating other companies. And it's a super interesting part. We are super international. So one of my team is from the US, one is from Great Britain, one is still based in New Zealand. So it's quite a challenge, but it's really cool. And what I'm doing there just right now is I'm working really close together with the two producers in our team, and we are two product managers, and we have to be on one way the bridge between the development team and our team. On the other side, I have always to take a look about how we are now in the process, where we are going, what we need to do next. I have to give the, let me say, a bit of the competition analysis, knowing the market, see what the market is aiming for, what are our goals, are we coming together, what is the goal of the dev team, and so on. So things like this. Then what I'm doing just right now is trying to evolve our system, so how we work together, because when you come in as a new person, you have the one in a million opportunity to take a look without knowing how things are going on, and then try to evolve it together with a team. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy this, because even when I'm the youngest, not the youngest in age, but the youngest person in our team, I just say something, and then we're trying this out. And I'm always on the side. Trying out new things together is really good. And even when we're failing, then we learned why we failed, and we can doing things better. So yeah, and that were almost the first 2 months in my new job, and it's cool. So I'm super happy about this.
Yeah, it's awesome, because you're telling it very candidly and like real world. That's what you're doing. Some people are a bit more secretive about these things. I really enjoy that you're not. And yeah, it's so good when work is fun, right?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah. And what exactly I'm working on, I can't tell, obviously, because it's, but that is, it's not a secret. It's what we're doing in the company. And I think most of the people know what we are working on, and you can always check out our portfolio. But yeah, of course we are evolving. We are doing fine. We are hiring many new people. So everything is cool. Awesome. And I will find my place. And I think when we had this talk, let me say a year later, I will know many other things I'm doing. But yeah, it's just 2 months, right? So I have to start somewhere. Indeed. So
yeah, I think it's great.
Very cool. You are the gamer's gamer. It's when Florian started with the thousands of games, I was like, yeah, sure, you know. And now I know. Oh, okay, it's true. Very nice. not in a. I didn't believe it, but it's like, yeah, maybe this is a slight, you know, over the top thing. Probably not. I have one or two questions for you before we get into wrapping up. You told us already some of your backgrounds. Do you want to tell us how you grew up and how you got into games in the first place? I think that's already always a very, very interesting story. Many are relatable, some are not. So would love to know about your influences, and because it's so strong in you, the games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say thanks to my dad, because my dad is a comic nerd and gamer. So he always was a big Nintendo fanboy, let me say fanboy, even when it's my dad.
Fan man.
No, fanboy. he loves playing Zelda. He was a really huge Prince of Persia fan and Assassin's Creed. So that's those kind of games. And luckily, he had also Age of Empires 2 and Heroes of Might and Magic 3. And I loved those games. And there is a really sweet story about when I started to playing this game, these kind of games. So the Heroes of Might and Magic thing we had were only available in English, and I was really small during back then. And I played it with my younger brother, and we really tried to find out what we have to do, because when you can't read the fucking text, what to do, it's really complicated. And the game is not easy at all. Yeah. So I remember that we were going to my parents before Christmas one year and asked them if we can have a book to translate things. Because it's not like, yeah, you know, during the days, it wasn't like just Google it. It was more like, we need to have a book to translate things. So and then we were just sitting on the floor, translate everything, try to find out what's going on. And it was so sweet. I don't know. And what I found a few years ago when I just looked through all our old games is I had, I was writing like little papers with enemies, a pack are enemies, because we always have to try and error and find out. And so we make many lists in many games, and oh, it was so sweet. And to be honest, because of this, I started to getting English a bit, but I have dyslexia, so English is always, was always a challenge, and it still is when I'm super sleepy and tired, but because I have to concentrate more than other people when I'm speaking English. But it was so, I don't know, I went then to school and I wasn't good in English, obviously, because having dyslexia, even German is not that easy. And then I went to a therapist for many years, and I became good in German. And but it's not this easy to just evolve everything in English. It's not the same. Every language is different. So, and then all my teachers in middle school were saying, yeah, Jenny, to be honest, don't try it. You will never get good grades. So you can just sit there and don't say something. And we will let you pass with a, and I was so, it was really frustrating. And I imagine when I was a teenager, I was 16, someone said, it's such a mean thing to me, a teacher, that I were driving home by bike and crying in the arms of my mom because I was so frustrated. And I told her I don't want to go there ever again. And then when I started into the industry, I was so, oh my God, Jenny, you will never, never be good enough to work really in the industry because it's so international, and you will just, you know, it will always be your, like a gate you can't break through. But then, because all the people are nice and everyone is practicing with you, and nobody is saying, oh, that's wrong, you have to say it this, or your pronouncing is wrong. It's not like in school. So I learned a lot. And to be honest, just right now, it's wonderful because we have three different nationality natives, let me say it this way. Mm-hmm. I'm just asking about sayings or whatever, but and they always so, you know, so supportive, and they helping, and my English is evolving again because after Corona, I didn't speak much like many other people because you don't see each other. And I don't know, I learned that you can evolve still. And,
and here you are.
Everyone can do it.
1 hour and 12 minutes into an English podcast. Hello. Hello, we are here.
Please go back in time and tell this my teachers. They will laugh and sing, I don't believe this. That's not possible. Yeah. So just a shout out for everyone who thinks you can't make it. That's a lie. Everyone can make it. When I can make it, everyone can make it.
Let's go. Yeah.
Hey, teachers, leave those kids alone.
Let's go, baby. That's good. I feel so motivated right now. This is, once again, this is the motivation corner. Man, I love it. Hey, I have a funny story. I have to tell it to you. So, quick one. I was a really big fan of English in school because I was really not interested in many other things other than talking and games, of course. So, from 11th grade, I started really stepping on the gas in English, and then... And it was actually in 10th grade. And so we asked our English teacher, who can take English major, you know, in German school, we have Leistungskurses. So who can take the English focused subjects? And she was like, she looked around the classroom and she was like, no, pretty much all of you, except Paul. And so there was one friend of ours.
Get out of here, like, Paul.
A bit of a weak pronunciation and was a bit like unsure about stuff. He's a really cool guy, but she just called him out. And I was like, that's so mean. We laughed about it for years. I can still laugh about it. Yeah, so I that just reminded me of that. So Paul wasn't very happy that day.
I can imagine.
Poor Paul.
But I don't know. I think you can always start things. When you never start, then I just starting playing viola 3 years ago, and it's my first instrument. Starting with a f***ing
serious string instrument.
It's not the easiest, Jenny, but I chose this, and now I have to live with it. That my teacher is saying, "Yeah, you have to do with the right hand more this. Oh, it looks so stiff. Ah, yeah, but you didn't start as a kid like everyone does." And I say, "Yeah, I know this. I will do this. One day I can make these strange movements." Yeah,
but this is actually exactly what my other question to you was. And thank you for telling the Heroes of Might and Magic story. By the way, one comment about that for clarification. In Heroes of Might and Magic, there are monsters on the map, but they only appear as one monster. And then it says pack or horde or something.
A few.
Little Jenny and little Julian had to know how many they're going to run into. And that's why you had to translate pack, horde, and know how many they are, right?
I can remember just once we clicked on an enemy and it was like 500 or so. Oh my god, we are fucked. It was so
peace.
Okay, so this is impossible.
Such a good game. I touched the game Heroes of Might and Magic 3. Yeah, a year ago, I found it on Steam, and I was like, hell yeah, I'll buy this just to play it for an hour. It's such a good game. It feels so good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we always play together, and with my dad, obviously, and I even played together Heavy Rain with my mom, but she was just watching me playing, and it's just so amazing when you're playing with your mom and she's screaming, "Don't cut your finger! I have to know! Don't do it!" I was so, "Oh my god, I have to look away! I can't!" It was really
That's
cool.
So great.
So I'm really
That's
happy so because I have really cheerful parents. They always helping me.
That's awesome. Hey, my second question for this end of the episode, kind of. Jenny, as an artist, so you said earlier, you said a couple of things. So now that's actually a great segue. You said you're starting a musical instrument. That's really cool. Respect for that. And then you said back in the day you built hundreds of Age of Empires maps. And then you said something, you know, when we talked about like roads into the industry and so on, you said that maybe there's a feeling of being too old, you know, not having studied, not having started so early, maybe same as a serious string instrument. But then again, you know, you've made many maps and you've really engaged with games. And, well, you just, as far as I know you and the vibes I'm getting from you, you're basically like super creative. So what about that? Do you have like a creative dream? Do you want to be an artist and maybe, you know, a professional artist at some point? Is there still a next developmental Jenny stage that's waiting for us? How do you feel about that?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. So to be honest, my biggest dream when I was little Jenny was always writing a book. And it's
Good
never
idea.
Going away. And I'm writing a fantasy book, but it because of Corona, I don't know why, I just stopped working on it. And it's just over 2 years ago. And I really want to pick this up because my new working colleagues told me I have to. And they are so right, to be honest. But
I'm telling you too right now. You have to, okay?
Yeah, I
Florian,
have to.
Can you tell her as well?
My psychologist would say do stuff for yourself, not for other people. So I'm not sure if I should.
And the other thing I started is drawing. So at the beginning of Corona, I just decided I want to have a tattoo. And then I looked through hundreds of artists. I found one really nice. But I just began to design my own ones and was so, maybe. So last time you were just drawing something is when you were 19 or so. So maybe you have to start drawing. it was just a feeling. And then I drew 340 pictures right now since then. And
wow, you always with the big numbers. 1,000 games. Hundreds of AOE2 maps.
I'm sorry.
340 drawings. What?
I just counted them last week because a friend asked me and I was so okay. Oh God.
That's many.
I'm really invested in this. I don't know. I really wanted to, it was always like a small dream of me. I don't know why. I'm not a character artist, obviously, and I'm more, I'm calling myself a baby artist, but I love landscapes and ink and gouache drawings. And I'm such a huge, Star Wars and a lot of the Rings fans. So I just started with drawing myself the, smartphone case and everything like this. And now I love it. I just want to do this. And I decided to having an online course this weekend. So, because I really want to involve in the next step in my baby artist's life and want to learn more about the basics. So yeah, I think I'm super creative on one side, and on the other side, I'm really obsessed with, you know, systems and workflows. And I don't know, it's can be creative as well in a way. And because I learned to love it, it's always something I can do in teams, because usually nobody wants to set up those things. And I'm so, yeah, I can do this. Let me do this. And now I have the job as a product manager to do so. So it's really nice to do so. Mm-hmm.
So, well, this is great to hear. And you're obviously not half-assing it, but you're serious about it with 340 drawings and an online course and so on. That's really cool. And one comment, you know, I'm always wondering this because I always would like people to do what they can or something, you know, because art is like this inner thing that I think everybody has inside them in some way, and it just makes me happy when people try to dig for it. And sometimes you really have to dig for it, especially when you're coming from like a background or something where you have to be more secure. I feel this in myself often. I always have two people talking in me. One is like, yeah, let's make some money so we, you know, don't have to worry about this at all. And then the other one is like, yeah, but, you know, let's make some art and cool stuff so we are happy. And then, you know, they always have to negotiate. And many people don't go to the let the artist voice speak at all. And I think it's beautiful when you do. And,
and when it comes, but I think it's thanks to everyone, right? Everyone in our, let me say, games industry, because when you're surrounded by so many creative people, and even one of my newest friends is writing music and has a band and everything. And he is really like, I don't know. I love to listening to him all day because he doesn't know this, but he's sending so much creative power through the phone and the video call, you know, and I'm always like, oh God, I want to do more. I want to learn more. And I think, our industry is super creative. And sorry, I interrupted you, but
No worries.
I'm like SpongeBob, you know, gathering all the energy.
Yeah, that's how you have to do it. And it's about the people that surround you. And then, what was the other thing I wanted to say? Yeah, about systems. Well, what I found out, you know, trying to become somebody who just creates things like podcasts or writing or videos, that's the things I'm working on right now. You have to do it with systems anyway, but you can't do it in the first place. Well, at least I can't, you know, I have to find out what I want to do and then do it in a really bad and scrappy way, which is really annoying for the perfectionist inside of me. But all the scrappy stuff, you just get one or two scrappy versions out and you're like, okay, let's systematize this a little bit. And so, when you're doing art stuff for yourself or for others, systems are super important. So I think they really go hand in hand. Like they are not opponents at all. So I just wanted to comment on that.
And that's so true. I think most people didn't notice that they have their own systems even when they think they didn't have one.
What do you mean by that? That sounds reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. So I have a really creative friend and he's always like, no, 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 I'm living from day to day. And, you know, I'm just grabbing my pens and there isn't a system at all. But even when it's come to drawing, there's always a system behind this. And when you look into his, I don't know, into his working place, it has a system where every pen is and every whatever is. So he is thinking he doesn't have a system, but he's, you know, he's not drawing just randomly because he has the system in mind how to do it. It's also a system. So
that's true.
Yeah. But yeah, to be honest, I love organizing things in, let me say, professional ways, but I'm more the day to day, living, going on a hike person when it comes to private time. So yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. As always on this podcast, we have some quick fire questions in the end that aren't necessarily that quick, but they are definitely fire. And if you're ready, we'll ask them. I'll begin and then Florian has some as well.
Okay.
And then we'll wrap it up. All right?
Yeah.
So the first question is, what is the purpose of your being?
The purpose of my being, I think, is to do something with other people together to create something other people can enjoy. And we can enjoy. It's yeah, that's the purpose of my being.
Sweet. Sounds fantastic, yeah. What inspires you?
The games industry, obviously, but I have also Kilian Eng, for example, is one of my favorite artists. And I love the Yomai CEO, Connie. She's really great, so she's also very inspiring.
Great. What
oh,
is...
wait, I forgot one. Mm-hmm. I love to go hiking, and I travel to Japan on foot, 1,200 kilometers. And every time when I'm thinking, fuck Corona, I can't go out, I need inspiration, I close my eyes and thinking of this trip. That's also inspiration. Sorry.
So you walk 1,200 yourself?
Kilometers? No, 1,200 kilometers through Japan. Yes.
Oh, that's also a big number, Jenny, once again.
My portfolio of steps is like...
No.
So funny. Mm-hmm. With the big guns. Well, what is a beautiful day to you?
A beautiful day will start with a bit of morning rain, but just a bit. And then everything will smell very good. I am in nature going through woods. And afterwards meeting some friends and drinking a good whiskey, talking about old stories and listening to amazing music. Mm-hmm.
What a day. What is the change you want to see in the world?
Oh God. Yeah. Right now I really want to don't see wars. It's obviously right. But yeah, that's a really big wish. So maybe a smaller wish would be that everyone started to think on the next person, the closest person, you know, because when we're doing this, every person has a person who thought about them. That would be really great. So not only the selfish, I do my own thing and I don't care about other things. Yeah.
So that everybody kind of thinks about their neighbor, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. And the question that comes after, of course, is how do you contribute to that change you want to see?
Ooh. Okay. So, because I'm just working in a very international company, and before I studied not in Berlin, where I'm from. So I'm studying in Marburg and Antwerp. I learned that, you know, everyone has habits and everyone tries to be not thinking in, how do you say it in English, in categories. Mm-hmm. So not judging by the first glimpse, let me say. And I really started to work on it. And when it's happening, because it's sorry, when someone out there is saying it's never happening to him, it's or her, it's a lie, because it's just happening sometimes. I remind me inside of my head, no, Jenny, that's not okay. Take it back. You don't know this person. You never talk to her or him. Just be, you know? And I think that's the first thing I'm starting with. I'm trying to think about impacts when I do something or say something, what can be, yeah, what can follow up on this. And when I say something stupid or dumb or whatever, I'm always saying, oh, sorry, and try to, you know, the I hate elephants in a room.
Yeah.
I destroy elephants.
So annoying, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to the zoo.
And where you came from. And the first thing you said is that when you accidentally, so to speak, because it happens to all of us, you judge somebody on first sight, then you, at least, in, even if you don't say anything internally, also you take it back, right? That's what you said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just, that's cool. That's
just nice. Judging myself, you know, always thinking, no, that's not cool, Jenny. Don't do this anymore. Cool. And then, yeah, it's like working on your habit and behave and the whole how you think about other people system has to be break up, has to be open-minded. And it's really not always easy.
Oh, it's the hardest thing, and it's a lifelong thing. No, but that's great, and I love that that's what you said. I mean, that's just great. Okay, next question. If you would start a new save game in your life right now, what occupation would your new character have? Or class, or whatever, yeah.
Oh, so I can't choose the Overwonder class because that's what I'm now. So I think when I would start again, I would choose the opposite way. So making something very creative, be a musician or writing books, and then coming back to the industry, obviously, because I will love the industry. But yeah, so I'm an Overwonder usually and supportive character in games. So maybe I'm more the, you know, going on stage, pull out things. Playing a concert on stage. Come on. That's the goal.
Yeah.
Nice. A specialized character.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Last question from me for today. Do you have books that you often recommend or that you like to gift to people? Maybe one or two or three?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have some. So I like Richard Schwarz. It's a German author. He is writing fantasy stories. To be honest, I don't know how the books are called in English, but he has this Askir saga. The first book is Das Erste Horn, and it's one of the best books I ever read. And then from Tomke Drag, it was a female, I think she's Danish author. She wrote Letters for the King. I hate the Netflix thing. It doesn't have something to do with the original book, but for younger children or even for adults, it's just like the basic adventurous book I ever read. And after this, I wanted to write books in my life. So it's a really good one without fantasy. It's just middle age stuff and really cool.
So I'm going to I Googled next to this. So Tonke Drag, that's Tonke Dragt, Dutch writer, born in Indonesia, still alive, 91 years old. Very cool. Letters for the King, or in German, Der Brief für den König. That looks awesome. Now I want to read that.
It's really cool. Really, I love this book. I can borrow it to you. I have it here next to me. It's really not far away. Nice. So yeah, and then it's hard. It depends on where you are in life, maybe. What else you can read. But I really love books, so.
Well, give us a number three. Or, I don't know.
But to be honest, come on. I'm 34. Obviously, I would always say everyone has to read Harry Potter. Because that's part of our being when you are in my age. So
It's culture.
So, yeah, that's culture. Obviously, even when I didn't like Harry, to be honest, I don't know why, but he wasn't my friend during the adventure.
Okay.
So sorry to say this.
Sometimes a bit of an idiot, this young boy.
Yeah, it's selfish, and I don't know. No, he was nice in the beginning, and then he grew to a strange person I wouldn't want to have. He wouldn't be my friend. But
so funny. I've never heard anybody say this. It's so funny. No, it's so funny. I love that you say this.
Take that, Potter.
Yeah, take this, Potter.
Scared.
Potter, not everybody likes you.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Going over to another list, what are your, and this is going to be so hard for you, I imagine, what are your favorite three games?
Okay. I have to go with Dead Cells.
Mm-hmm. Let's go! Dead Cells, baby!
I love those fucking games so much.
It's so good!
It is. Then I would say Age of Empires 2, because I'm sure, so I can't count the hours I played, because I played it for thousands of years when I was a kid, but yeah, I think that has to be in my top three list.
It's probably over 10,000, right?
I have no numbers here. And okay, what else to choose? Let me just think a few seconds. Oh, favorite games. That's really tough. So I think Steam Bip wise, it would be PUBG, but that would be a lie because it's obviously not one of my, it's more a love hate relationship. But what else? I really loved. Oh yeah, Dragon Age Origins.
Mm.
Yeah, when I played this one, I was so in love, and I'm a big Elder Scrolls fan, a really big one. So everyone is freaking out about Cyberpunk is coming, or I will play Elden Ring this weekend, obviously. But for me, it's oh god, when the next Elder Scroll game will come out, I will just die. So
please don't.
But yeah. So a few triple, there are triple A games inside. Yeah, but during this day, I'm more into indie and AAA. But yeah.
All right. I guess you could say you might be too into indie at this point.
Too into indie. Wow, that was really good. Oh god.
Today Flo. It's a good day for recording podcasts.
Oh, so good.
That was really good.
Yeah, the plumber one was also amazing. Wow. Joke titty.
Who is somebody from the games industry who you would like to get to know?
Okay, who is someone from the I like to get to know? Oh god, I met so many cool people already. I want to met. Let me think. Oh, that's Ido Tin, but it's not really an only game related. Or who else? Ifye de Potrier.
Alrighty.
Because Shox is like, you know.
Shox rocks.
Hey man, if you lend me that book, I think I can make something happen.
Really? Oh,
of course.
Oh god.
Spoiler.
I really love this. She is just amazing.
Yeah, she's awesome. And she's really, really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that, and now I'm just a bit jealous that you already
something
met her.
Something that happens at this point, because this is a category that is new and we just introduced it last episode, is that actually there's a trap card behind this question. And it's a trap card for us, actually. So we now have a challenge, because GamesNet Berlin Europe is here to connect people. Our challenge now is to connect you to that person that you just named.
Oh, to Ifya. Oh god, yeah. She can speak German as well.
She speaks many languages.
Oh god.
And sorry for the spoiler, Flo. Yeah, I
didn't That's know. That's fine. I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of an easy challenge. I mean, but the last one was kind of hard, so we still have to work on that more. So yeah, once in a while you get an easy challenge. All right. And then who is someone you know who you think we should have on the podcast?
You should have on a podcast. Okay. There are many cool people in Berlin, so to pick someone...
Can also be from somewhere else.
Berlin and Europe,
right?
At least. But this will go on for years and years, so at some point we have to expand to the world and space.
Conquer everything.
Boy, that's really tough. Okay, I have too many people in mind. So I think obviously Konya would be a good choice, Konya Gebhardt.
Yeah.
Because she is an artist and she has passion and she has a great story to tell because she did so many different things. She is long time in the industry. She's a role model for many people. When you're looking on her Twitter account, she is like Yomai. She is Sea of Solitude. Mm-hmm. So she had a TED talk and wow, not many people had TED talks. So I think Konya will be a very good choice.
Yeah. Also, not many people have been on this podcast, but we only had 11 episodes so far. So just saying.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think she would be nice. But I really want to see someone from the music scene. Games music scene would be Maria or someone like this would be nice as well.
Not too many. We have some. You named a few. All right. And the last one is, where can people find you? And please don't give your address. Some people on this show have tried to dox themselves already. So just like online, like where, if they don't want to log into World of Warcraft, like where can they find you?
In World of Warcraft, they can look for it just because I'm not playing the game anymore. But yeah, you can find me on my YouTube channel, Tune to Indie. What will be nice, because we're always looking for people who support us and having fun with us. I'm on Instagram with June Uikaeva. What's June with an epsilon UN. But you can just look for Jenny Vergin, because you always find people with true names there. Same on Twitter. It's the same. Yeah. June Jenny. Or you can just add me on LinkedIn or ask for my Discord. If you want to have a chat about how to get in the games industry or how to be supportive, or maybe the game is just having a conversation with me about how we can build up new structures to getting in the industry in Germany. Yeah. So maybe Felix is listening. Felix, you can just always invite me. I will have a chat with you.
Get these apprenticeships going.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we will also, of course, add all this information to the show notes so people can just easily click a link and reach you. Yeah, thanks a lot, Jenny. It was fun talking to you. Great episode.
And, yeah, thank you so much. It was super sweet. It was so fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. And yeah, have a nice day, everyone.
You too. Goodbye.
Bye.
See everybody next time.
Bye.
Hi there, Simon here. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear here and you would like to hear more here, feel free to follow or to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you get your audio fix. We appreciate you and we promise you to bring you many more insightful conversations with fantastic games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. Thank you very much. And see you very soon. Bye bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, project manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and until next time.